Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Mixed martial arts and boxing fans, it's time for Fighter's Fury, Inside the Heart of a Champion, with your hosts, Brendan Tobin, Seema, and Tommy Guns. It's time for Fighter's Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Ah, damn, man. Happy Sunday morning, everybody. That was one of those no-sleep nights last night. UFC 226 was an absolute thriller. What can you say, man? Daniel Cormier is the heavyweight champion of the world. Fantastic performance against Stipe Miocic. We talked about this last week, about what the path to victory was for Daniel Cormier. I ended up picking Stipe Miocic last week, thinking that, you know, he goes out there, he finishes fights. We've seen DC get finished before, and it felt like that margin for error for Daniel was going to be very, very small. And the idea that he was going to go into that octagon and in a round's time knock out the longest reigning heavyweight champion in UFC history didn't cross my mind. But that's why I love this sport, man. I love the fact that you could talk about it eight ways, all the different things that could go, what you think is going to happen, how you think it's going to happen, why it's going to happen, and something completely different can occur. And that's what happened last night. Daniel Cormier walked to that octagon. He knocked out one of the baddest men on the planet, walked away with two gold belts and a chance to fight Brock Lesnar sometime down the line, whenever that may be. It was an awesome moment for him. And Daniel Cormier has done a lot of searching in his UFC career for acceptance from the fans, acceptance from peers, acceptance from the history books, because he's always going to have that asterisk next to his name of what his light heavyweight championship reign was, that it came with the idea that John Jones, you know, couldn't stay active, couldn't stay clean, couldn't stay out of jail, couldn't get his life together. But we in those discussions of always trying to put Daniel Cormier down because he's not this, he's not that, he's not John Jones. First of all, we have to realize what we're saying, and that is you're not maybe the greatest person to ever grace that octagon. It's a really high standard to put at somebody. And the rivalry was so heated. The rivalry is one of the best things this sport has had to offer, the genuine bitterness those guys have towards each other. It's fascinating every time they fight. It's fascinating every time they personally get into it. The backstory has been amazing. But aside from that, you also have to realize how good Daniel Cormier is. And that, yes, John Jones being as great as he is a fact. If those guys fight, he'll probably win 9.5 out of 10 times. But Daniel Cormier is still up there as one of the best guys to ever do it. He's an absolute badass. He's an absolute gentleman. And seeing him have that moment, separate from John Jones, nothing to do with the light heavyweight title, going back to a place where he was undefeated, going back to a division where he's never lost, LeVar Ball style. He went in there against a guy in Stipe Miocic who has defended that belt more than anybody has in the promotion's time and knocked him out. If that doesn't solidify the guy as an all-time great, I don't know what else he can do. I think at that point, you're just blatantly hating. And in the process, you're probably a John Jones stan. I love John Jones. He's the best fighter I've ever seen do it. I don't need to have the discussions about USADA or PEDs or the moralities of it. I know what my eyes saw. The guy's the best to ever do it. But Daniel Cormier, the way he goes in there, the way he fights, I mean, it's always a thriller. There's about one time in the guy's career you could go in there and say Daniel Cormier laid an absolute performance egg. And it was against Anderson Silva on 3 days notice, and he was just in there to get a paycheck, and he wasn't looking to get face kicked into tomorrow. But other than that, the performances against Gustafson, the performances against Anthony Rumble Johnson, one of the scariest men on the planet, the performances in Strikeforce against Josh Barnett, Dan Henderson. I mean, the list goes on and on. And you look at his last fight against John Jones, where he did go win a round, where he did go in there and get in John's kitchen and had a much, much better game plan than he did the first time. And he walked into a head kick. It happens. That's the sport. That's the greatness of it. And then yesterday, goes in there, walks through a guy who's throwing absolute bombs at him, who's bullying him, who looked at a point like, can't really take this guy down. This is a tough go for me. And put a fist right in the dude's face and ended his title reign. It was absolutely awesome. It was one of those nights where it reminds you why you like the sport. You like it for those moments. And you know that a guy like Daniel, the reason I like Daniel Cormier and why he's so easy to root for, I think, is there's times where he could be a little cheesy and he puts his own spin on things. But I do like the fact that he respects the conversation and he respects the standing and the legacy talks and all that stuff. I like the fact that he acknowledges that stuff and where it can go and what it can mean and what the ramifications are. And he knows that the John, he doesn't run from it. The only thing that he's ever put out there is, oh yeah, by the way, you know, the dude may have been juiced when we fought, but it's not like he's not running from the fact that he lost. When he got the belt put back in his hands, he's like, look, what am I going to do? Turn it down in my contract? I know what championships mean. They mean more money. You know, I feel like that's why, as these years have gone on, people have become more, have embraced DC more, have started to root for him more, and have gone away from that John Jones stuff. But, you know, that performance yesterday, it just has to stand by itself without all the talks of, yeah, well, he could never beat John. All right. Yeah, you're right. He couldn't. But he just beat a guy. He beat a guy in Stipe Miocic, did the thing. We've all, as fans, this is the thing with DC and with John. As fans, we all sit here and we clamor for John Jones to fight. We clamor for it. I want to see this guy fight. He's one of the best I've ever seen do it. But he's not there to show up. He doesn't show up to work enough. And with Daniel, he shows up to work all the time. Always answers the bell. Always is out there performing and entertaining for the fans. And we as fans for a long time have been wanting John Bones Jones to step up, fight heavyweights, because he cleaned out 205. But the dude could never stop doing drugs or PEDs or getting into hit and runs or staying out of trouble that he never got that moment that he should have had last night. You know, he got as close to it, his last win over Daniel Cormier. He got the redemption story. He built his life back together. He called out Brock Lesnar. And we finally thought John Jones is on his way to superstardom. And another bleep up. However you want to say it happened. Whether it was he was juicing, whether he had a tainted supplement, whether he was, you know, just in the wrong room somewhere and something got in his system. How many strikes does a guy get before you're like, oh, I can't believe John Jones in trouble again. Fooled me, John. I thought you were going to get it right. And his rival, who he's beaten twice. Yesterday, did the thing the fans have always been asking John to do, which was go up, not only show that you're the baddest man on the planet, but beat the heavyweight champion of the world, become heavyweight champion of the world. And he did it in spectacular fashion. He did a thing John Jones was never willing nor ever able to stay active enough to do. And so, all debates aside, between DC, John Jones, don't get it twisted. John Jones is a better fighter than Daniel Cormier, but the better guy, the better fighter for the fans is Daniel Cormier. He is. He went out, he took up the challenge, went back to his natural weight, knocked out Stipe. What else can be said? All this talk about greatest of all time. You want to talk about greatest of all time? Look, in my eyes, I've seen it. I know who's a better fighter. I know John Jones is a better fighter than Daniel, is a better fighter than Daniel Cormier. However, you're going to look at this now and say, DC's got something that's completely separate from that rivalry now. And even if John Jones is able to go up one day to heavyweight and win the heavyweight title, been done. Done by your biggest rival. And not only that, and this is also why it's so sweet, because we know those guys hate each other. We know that it is probably going to be bitter till the very end with those two. We know that they got into a very, very personal back and forth on social media last week. So John may have the status, John may have the wins, but Daniel Cormier has the accolade, and not only that, he just took John Jones' biggest paycheck and walked out the door with it. Because last night when Brock Lesnar enters that octagon and he shoves Daniel Cormier halfway across it, tell me you didn't jump out of your seat. I mean, all these phonies yesterday who are on social media is like, oh, I don't like this. This is so WWE. Are the same idiots who brought Mayweather versus McGregor. They're the same people who like all the antics, all the theatrics. You act like you don't. You act like you want the purity of the sport. No, you don't. You want a little sizzle on it. Everybody likes steak, but you like to throw a little extra something on it every once in a while if you have it all the time. All the purists who are out there and are like, oh, this is so fake and so fun. So what? That ain't for you? You're going to watch no matter what. Dummies? They're not doing that for you. They're doing that for grandma. They're doing that for auntie. They're doing that for the uncle who's never watched it before. Idiots. You're hooked no matter what. You're watching UFC 226. Does that have any theatrics? No. So they don't need to sell you. They need to sell the next pay-per-view. People just don't get that, man. It's so weird to me. They're like, oh, but this isn't the purity of the sport. Yeah, it's not. You want to know why? Because if it was the purity of the sport, it's getting 75,000 pay-per-views, which we've had this year. 120,000 pay-per-views, which we've had this year. And I got to tell you another thing I'm pissed about. These so-called journalists who are like, wasn't Brock supposed to be in the USADA? Well, when's his test up? Huh? So now, I'm hoping that we're going to get this fight in November. There's a report last night from Jeremy Botter from Bleacher Report that multiple sources confirm this is going to be the fight at MSG. I'm like, hot damn, let's go. And everybody's like, yeah, but does he have a suspension? He's been gone for 3 years. Unfreeze the suspension. He's been fighting The Undertaker. That's a suspension. You idiots. He's out there fighting Goldberg. It's like, what? Now I got to wait till January for this circus? Giving him more of a window to get caught? Oh, you guys ruined the fun. I swear to God. We're all sitting here. We're like, oh, we just got done with one of the worst heavyweight fights of all time. We topped that with one of the coolest heavyweight moments of all time. On top of that, Brock Lesnar just walked into the ring. He shoves Daniel Cormier. They're having a fun back and forth. And we're getting ready to go. This is supposed to happen in some months. And you're just like, oh, man. What about the USADA test? You idiots. Really? So now what are we going to do? We're going to sit around here just waiting for Brock Lesnar to screw this up via test. I really was mad at you guys last night. Go search out the people juicing in baseball and keep them out of the Hall of Fame. I'm so tired of this. All these journalists who never see a weight room, they're out there worried about the performance-enhancing drug problems of professional athletes. People are trying to finally tune their bodies to make their bodies as efficient as possible to go fight another man in a cage. And you guys are trying to say, yeah, Brock Lesnar's been gone for 3 months. He should need another 6 month suspension. What? Come on. Waste of my time. Dana White was like, so taken aback. He's like, oh, yeah, I don't know when he was in the USADA pool. And then the idiot says last week. Should have been like, yeah, he's been in the USADA test this whole time, you dummies. Mystery fighter clause. This USADA sucks. I hate it. Always ruining the fun. Nothing good ever comes out of it. I mean, honestly, like, we're sitting here and it's just like, all right. He has another... For what? I mean, let's be honest. If Brock Lesnar does take all the steroids, the size that he is, does 2 months make a difference? That much of a difference? What are we talking about here? November to January. He needs to be clean for another couple months. Come on. That bummed me out yesterday. But that was fun. I don't care if it looked hokey in stage. I like theatrics. I like a little extra on my fight stuff. I don't mind it. And you guys do too. You're a bunch of phonies. You love McGregor's bleep talking. You love Chael Sonnen's bleep talking. Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson can't say two words. You guys are like, I'm not watching him. Might be the best talent to ever grace the octagon. Maybe better than Jon Jones. Nobody gives a rat's ass when the mouse fights. But you're mad that Brock Lesnar came in there and shoved Daniel Cormier. You shove off. The hell out of here. It was awesome. It was a fun night. Really, really cool for Daniel Cormier. But as far as, look, people were going with this yesterday, and they're talking about the GOAT status. Who's the greatest of all time? Who's the greatest of all time? With Daniel Cormier. I don't think Daniel Cormier is the greatest of all time. Because I've seen him lose to the guy I think is the greatest of all time. And then you go in there and you say, well, who else is in those discussions? And they bring up George St. Pierre. I don't know if George St. Pierre was juicing or not. He comes out there very vocal and he says, oh, I want to say I am not coming back until there are strict performance enhancing. Nah, it's like, all right, I don't know if you were clean or not. That's all well and good to say. But the guy who is usually loudest chirping could be a diversion. I don't know. I don't think Mighty Mouse cheated. But let's say he didn't. We're getting on his second fight with Henry Cejudo. I mean, Mighty Mouse has the longest reign of all time. And like, more than half of his fights are rematches. So that's one of the thinnest divisions forever. And he's been around forever. They somehow haven't been able to build it up. Either because they don't care or whatever. So, argument against him. You know, you can dice down all these guys. I know most likely, unless Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones do end up ever fighting a third time at heavyweight and DC's able to beat him, it's going to be hard in my mind to ever dethrone Bones Jones from the top seat. And I got to tell you, a guy who doesn't get enough consideration when all this GOAT stuff was going down last night, and that's Conor McGregor. I find it hard to believe that Conor McGregor, who fights in the two hardest divisions of mixed martial arts and is the only guy to hold those belts at the same time. And I got a hard time not putting him in that conversation. It's crazy to me. On top of all the other stuff that he's able to bring to the table. Highest selling fighter of all time. Biggest grossing pay-per-views of all time. I mean, it's a guy who knocked out Jose Aldo. Knocked out Eddie Alvarez. Knocked out Chad Mendez. I mean, you know, because he lost to Nate Diaz? I mean, what are we doing here? He lost to Nate Diaz on 10 days notice and fought him at a weight class he's never fought at before. People are harsh with this bleep. And then came back and beat him. Because he's gone away. Oh, I'm sorry. So one guy makes so much money in UFC and doesn't have to fight as frequently and doesn't have to defend his belt every 3 weeks like every other champion. That takes him out of the conversation. You guys remember how he got to that conversation, right? Because he went in there and he knocked mother bleepers out left and right in the first round. That's just weird to me. Anyway, we got lots to get to from last night, UFC 226, but a very, very cool night. Daniel Cormier knocking out Stipe, becoming heavyweight champion of the world, an all-time moment for him. Really fun. We're back after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
All right, folks, I'm here with Brock Lesnar. Brock. What does this all mean to you, Brock?
Let me tell you something. I walked into this building and watched the heavyweight disasters from the beginning. Nagano's a piece of Miocic's a piece of DC!
That was funny, man. That's funny. Fighters Fury rolls on here. Segment number two. Seaman's in the building. What's up, man?
What up?
Did you have fun last night watching that?
I did. I was excited about that fight because I was hopeful that it was going to reverse what I had just experienced the 15 or 16 minutes, 17 minutes that I could not get back from my life of watching the Ngannou fight.
Didn't that feel refund worthy? How bad that fight was?
Yeah,
was
I think that UFC could do great PR right now by giving us all about $15 back.
Yeah, I was more excited for that fight than any fight on the card. Me too. I was geeked for that, and I felt like something was taken from me when it was done. I was like, no. And I think it was Cruz who kept saying like,
He's saving up his gas tank.
Yeah, he's like,
it's gonna let it all go in the third round.
Like, what?
He's gonna let it go in the third round. I'm really certain about this.
Yeah, like he's worried about the cardio monster that is Derek Lewis. That's gonna keep it going. It was tough, man.
I actually expected Miocic Cormier to be somewhat more like that fight.
Yeah, more patient.
I'm more patient and more, you know, I thought they would lean on each other a little bit. I thought that Miocic would try to, you know, put some extra weight on Cormier in the corner if he could because of his height.
Right.
And it was the exact opposite.
Well, I think that's what's tough about that fight with that matchup between Ngannou and Lewis is, you know, you expect Ngannou to be the aggressor. And Derek's always a counterpuncher. He always leans back and waits for guys to make their mistake because he's not super mobile. Like, he's more mobile than he looks for his physique. But, you know, and then we learned that he had the back issues flare up again last night, which has been a chronic problem of his. So you have a guy who's injured who's a counterpuncher, trying to win on a guy who's never getting in there. So Derek Lewis all of a sudden is becoming the switch kick master because the only thing that he can get in the range of the guy because he's never engaging in the fight. It was so bad.
Did Dana come out and say anything about the fight?
He ripped Ngannou. He did not rip Derek Lewis. He says, because Derek Lewis, I mean, and this is why everybody...
He's an opponent.
Yeah. Derek Lewis is... the reason everybody loves him, he's super honest. And he's just like, I'm embarrassed. He says, you know, he told me at the weigh-ins that he was going to put me to sleep and I wanted to knock him out. So even with this win, and he definitely won all three rounds, it feels like a loss to me. I thought if I won, I would have been a win away from the... I thought I would have been right in line for the title. And with this, he says, I probably need three fights to even get back in the talks. So that's, when a guy comes out and says that, it's hard to be mad at him. Like, he's owning it.
Plus, and I think he had his back was acting up.
Yeah, his back was acting up. And he's like, and they say, what do they say you could do? And he goes, they say I got to lose weight. And it was like, it was as if you said, oh, you have to give up one of your children.
Yeah.
He's like, doctor says I gotta lose weight. I walk around like 290. I was like, this guy's the best. I can't stay mad at him. But Dana crushed Ngannou, which is funny because Dana White, I mean, he was like full pants tent when Ngannou knocked out Overeem. This was his guy. He was ready to go. He's like, oh, this guy's the future. He called him. He's like, he's the next star. And it reminds you how flippant the fight game is with your promotion, with your promoter, because, you know, one ass kicking from Stipe and now this performance. And Dana's like, guy's got a huge ego. A lot of run-ins with us personally. Not a great guy. Not a great individual. Like, they threw Ngannou under the bus real fast. But,
well, you know what? He fought last night like a guy that was looking to protect his paycheck.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to coast. And, you know, I'm definitely not going to give Lewis the opportunity to knock me out. And that's how he fought.
But, the thing I find weird about Francis, and this is a tough thing for a guy, you know, it's French. I don't think anybody got any comments from him last night, which kind of sucks because, you know, Stipe Miocic got knocked out last night and he did every media obligation that was asked of him with a busted up face, and nobody talked to Francis. I can't find the quotes anywhere.
The guy that after the bell rang, he walked around in the cage with his hands up?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
Like, I'm just like, hey, can we get any thoughts of what the hell? What was that? Because it's not like Derek Lewis is going in there and he's threatening the takedown. The only time he tried it yesterday was like, let's try and do something, please. Please, yeah. Sir. I don't know. I don't know what that is. But it was terrible. I know that.
Herb Dean, don't make me make you fight.
That was the weirdest thing ever. When did we ever see that? The only time we see that is in a fight where two guys are usually laying on top of each other. When do you
a GSP fight?
Yeah, when do you ever see Seema? Do you remember, when's the last time you
Never.
Remember the two guys on their hey, I'm going to take points away if you guys don't start fighting. I had a listener send, he was at the fights. He sent me a video from the crowds. They were doing the wave during the fight. That's how bad that fight. Doing the wave at a UFC event. Crazy. Let me get your thoughts on DC. What do you think of the performance? And do you think it erased or got him some more acceptance from the fight fans beating Stipe the way he did?
Did it or should it? Yes.
Should it?
Yes. Did it? I mean, that remains to be seen. There's going to be those haters and the John Jones lovers of the world that, you know, will always critique or criticize Cormier, but I think you made perfectly valid points in the first segment that this, you know, John Jones has not really lived up to it. And every time he's done something positive, there's an asterisk next to it.
There's always a
footnote.
That's the thing that annoys me about guys who ride for John Jones, because I love John Jones as a fighter. I love watching John Jones perform. But I'm also, as a fan, pissed at John Jones because he doesn't perform enough in the octagon. And it's not like McGregor where it's voluntary and I've gone off to these great riches. It's because he can't stop screwing up. And
what's the status on John Jones right now?
He has a temporary, he has a suspension, I believe, from the California State Athletic Commission. And also, is a temporarily suspended license from the California State Athletic Commission pending his USADA suspension. I don't know when that's coming down. Everybody around him, his management, Dana White, reporters have all put this song and dance together that it looks good. It looks like he's going to come back sometime soon. And there were rumors even that he was going to be coming back for a Brock Lesnar fight. And the idea that now they said, nah, let's scratch that. We're going to go with DC or the winner of DC, Stipe fighting Brock. It kind of makes me think that John Jones is going to get a long suspension.
I could understand it, but I also think it makes perfect sense. Cormier is 39 years old. So realistically, I mean, obviously he showed some power last night. Could we look at him like a Dan Henderson where he can fight, you know, however long he wants?
Right.
Or can he compete at a high level for two or three more years? You don't know until the guy steps in the cage or in the ring. So I think that it makes sense because he beat Miocic and now has two titles for the Brock Lesnar fight to happen. I think that if Miocic wins that fight, I don't see Brock Lesnar fighting Miocic.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they seem to give the impression that it was going to be
either or.
But you may be right. I mean, look, Miosic is amazing. He can't get three words out of him. So that would be two guys who don't talk selling a fight. You know, Daniel, there's a couple of things with the idea. Like, obviously, John versus Brock would have been cool because you have two body types. Like, the visual of it would be spectacular. But if you're going to ask me what's a more intriguing fight, because I feel like John Jones would whoop Brock Lesnar's ass badly.
I agree.
DC,
they're going to engage.
He should beat his ass, but there's a big size discrepancy, and I don't know. Look, we saw one last night, and DC's been always dealing with size discrepancy, but that's always going to be a factor. Can he take him down? If Brock did get on top, they're both really good wrestlers. If Brock got on top of him, could he damage him? Now, it's Daniel Cormier. Nobody gets on top of Daniel Cormier. That's not John Jones, but I feel like it's a more intriguing fight, almost because it's a more even fight, even though I don't feel like it's that even. I feel like DC should still beat Brock fairly easily. I don't know, but, you know, that's one of those things. Like, I think that part of the reason that they went this route is they know John's not coming back for a while, because I think if they did, I do think that they would want to do that fight instead, because I think pay-per-view wise it probably would do more, even if DC is more charismatic. John's just, I think, a little bit more mainstream known, but that can't be a great sign for him or anything that's coming down the pipe. We're back after this.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
Welcome back, Fighters Fury here on 790, The Ticket. Tobin and Seema here with you. Shout out to Anthony Pettis, by the way, getting back in the win column. That was cool to see for him yesterday.
That was impressive. I thought he was going to get beat.
I did too.
It was not looking good for him.
You can't have a lot of confidence in the way he's fought lately, but I thought that was an interesting strategy. They mentioned that he said, I'm not focusing on wrestling so much. I'm going to focus on what made me good. And yeah, I mean, like, really great submissions off Anthony Pettis' back, really highlight reel and high-level striking. That's what got him to what he was.
Go with what got you there.
Yeah, so that was cool to see. Wanted to give a little time to what went down at the Hard Rock this past week. You had Hometown Throwdown going down. Shout out to Harold Calderon, alumni of the show, getting a win over JD Martinez. Really, I got to say, very, very impressive performance from Harold. He was very accurate, blistering attack to the body to JD Martinez. Super accurate with his striking. And he looks like a guy who improves to 17-0. Calderon looks like he's ready to take a definite jump after watching him have that performance. Had a very, very raucous fan base. It got very, very personal between those two guys. I mean, it was, man, you got two guys from the same city who are bringing their allegiances into a building. It can get pretty hostile. Like, it was pretty brutal, Seema, with how guys were getting. Like, they were saying some bad words, throwing towards both guys, mostly towards JD Martinez.
They didn't have your bleep machine either.
They didn't have my bleep machine either. No, they didn't, man. But that was it was nonetheless a really, really good performance from those young guys. I thought that card had a hell of a show. There was a really, really, really fun fight. Jesse Cruz against Raul Chirino. Chirino knocked down Cruz in the first round. Cruz is, I think, he just looked a lot smaller than him, and he got knocked down almost through the ropes in the first round. Came back, put him down in the second round, and really mustered up a really good performance. I thought they were pretty even going into the fifth and sixth rounds, and I thought Cruz took it away, and that's how the judges had it as well. And then I got to see the big Russian. Although I got to say that Ivan Dychko, that whoever he was in there with didn't look like he was in for a long night haul.
No, and Dychko, he actually said it after the fight. I think he was like, that was not a fight.
This was not a fight. This guy come in here. First of all, that dude looked like he picked up his shorts at Walmart. He didn't have boxing trunks on.
Did you see when he got clipped and he dropped, it was the oddest thing. He dropped to his knees, he fell to his side, and then he curled up like he was spooning.
Weird.
It was the old spoon move.
Yeah, it was like, because I think it was a couple fights. It was maybe the fight before. Yeah, it was the Levon Navarro fight. He actually did knock out his opponent with a body shot.
He did.
And so you could tell that was a legit. And then this guy goes down and he's like curling up. It's like, what? What happened?
It was like the third time he got hit in the fight.
Yeah, it was weird. It was weird. So that
and he looked to the corner. You remember that movie back? I'd say back in the day, where they were like jailhouse brawling, and you know, the warden was in charge, and the guy like he's fighting this enormous guy, and he hits him, and the guy goes down and kind of looks over and winks. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
You know? Okay, I'm probably dating myself. But that's what I felt like was happening. Like, I think, what's his name? Maurice Harris kind of looked over to the corner like, okay, first round. This one I go down?
Yeah.
He's like, right now?
Now?
Now? Okay, I'm down.
Like, they had
down. Okay, let me look real. Let me make it look real now.
Well, I saw the last fight that Ditchko had, and he, like, knocked out a dude, and it looked like he tased him. That's how bad he hit him. So I didn't feel
Don't get me wrong. Ditchko, I mean, what's he, 6'10", 6'9", 11",
I think, yeah.
Something like that. And he's got, you know, good shape, good size to him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure because he's punching down, you get more force behind that. The trajectory helps.
Yeah.
So I'm not questioning that he hits hard or that he has a great punch.
We're questioning the shot that put it out, finished it. It looked a little fugazi.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Forget about it.
Somebody texted in 67974. What fight was worse, Woodley Maya or Lewis Ngannou? I got to go Lewis Ngannou because
too.
I get why a Maya fight is boring. Like, you know, Tyron Woodley's trying to not get choked out. He doesn't want to do anything dumb. Yeah,
Damian Maya's a spider monkey.
These two, you know, like Lewis came out, he had the best post on social media where he's like, modified rules for Lewis versus Ngannou. 1 minute rounds, 5 minute breaks between rounds, points taken away for takedown attempts. Like, he had big expectations. He knew he's the one who called out Ngannou. And I don't know, like, you go from this, it is tough to say that a guy ruins his image in just a matter of two fights, but Ngannou went from UFC Drago to a guy I don't think fans will want to see fight. You know,
I think he's exciting against guys he knows he can beat. And that's about it.
But isn't, you would think, like, he went on there with Alistair Overeem, who,
the Reem's not the same.
I understand.
But he is not horse meat Reem.
If you were to say, though, even if he's not horse meat Reem, I would say at the skill level with Derek Lewis, they're pretty on par. But even if you think Derek Lewis is better, he's not way, way better. And you had Francis Ngannou in there in that fight throwing caution to the wind, just throwing everything at him, and then puts one of the nastiest KOs you've ever seen in your life with that uppercut. And this is just like, it felt like he wanted no part of being in there. It was very, very strange. Very strange.
His new music, Walk Into the Cage, should be I'm Too Sexy for My.
I'm too sexy to punch, apparently.
He kind of has this demeanor now, and obviously the quote you shared from Dana really supports that.
Yeah.
That he's feeling himself.
Yeah, he definitely did.
And that's great. You can feel yourself, but I thought last night was just, in Brock Lesnar, a debacle.
I think that there's always special cases in fighting. So, like, if you have an opportunity to make a Brock Lesnar fight, you got to do sometimes what's best for business. And so I'm cool with DC. I don't have a problem with Brock Lesnar getting a fight to get a shot at the title, just because, you know, he's been a former champion. I get the story there. His last win was a fight over Mark Hunt, who I believe is still a top 10 guy. So it's not the most ideal thing in the world to give him a title shot, but we know that rules are bent all the time in these scenarios. Like,
hey.
They are, man. They are. Like, you know, like Conor McGregor has jumped. He jumped divisions. He fights Eddie Alvarez right away for the lightweight belt. But I do feel for a guy like Stipe in this regard. You know, he's not the most marketable guy in the world, but he's also not a diva about it. You know, like he's just as good a dude as it gets. And so I do feel for him in this regard. Like, if this fight with Brock Lesnar happens in January, well, what does Stipe do from here? Does he go and fight? Does he go fight Francis Ngannou again? Probably not. Like, he's kind of cleaned out the division. So
you think he gets a rematch?
He's got to do.
So let's go here now.
Because there's nowhere to go and wait.
Understood. But here's a guy that defended his heavyweight title for the most times ever in UFC history.
Yep.
Three times. So does he not? We see guys get automatic rematches constantly.
Absolutely. It happened recently with.
Look at Dillashaw.
Happened next month with Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt.
Right.
And he knocked Garbrandt out in the first round. Happened with Rose fighting Joanna. Joanna got an automatic rematch after a first round knockout loss.
So why does Miocic not entitled to that rematch? Because he actually set a record in title defenses for that division. So realistically, I think that he should get a rematch. Why not?
I think he does.
Especially because of his path to get there. And as you stated, he cleaned out the entire division. So he should get a rematch. And when he gets a rematch, maybe he won't be so sloppy.
I wonder who he would fight in that regard because, you know, Curtis Blaydes is really making his way. He had a huge performance over Overeem this last time where, you know, he stopped Overeem with strikes. And you're starting to see Curtis Blaydes isn't just a dry humper. You know, he's starting to go out there and he's winning fights and the striking is coming along for him. We've seen Steve beat Overeem. Don't believe he's fought Derek Lewis. I may be mistaken on that. You know, Mark Hunt's number six. Like, this is the thing. Mark Hunt's the sixth ranked heavyweight in the world, so it's not the deepest division in the world. And if you're Stipe, do you know, I know he's just having a kid. Is this one of those things where maybe we don't see Stipe for a year?
Is he going to Conor McGregor us?
I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, does he just, I mean, he beat the holy hell out of Francis Ngannou, so I can't see you making that fight again. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. And I don't know if I want to fight a Francis Ngannou, even this version of him, thinking that, well, what if he does catch me once and then I'm the guy who lost to the guy that Dana White wants to now bury. You know, maybe a fight with him, Derek Lewis, makes sense. Like, Derek Lewis is a guy who is a fun fighter, and I think for Derek's goals of getting into a title picture, that would bring a lot to it. Steven mentioned Junior Dos Santos, who's fighting next week. He's beaten him twice. Once was very, very close, and he just knocked him out in the first round really recently. So I don't think he's going to do that one.
Yeah, I think Dos Santos is done. The brutal fights that he's been in are starting to accumulate. Maybe Ngannou Dos Santos.
Maybe.
Dos Santos fights next week, right?
Yeah, he fights.
If he wins.
Ivanov.
Yeah, he's got to win that fight.
Oh, they are 1-1. They split in the first one. Yeah, that was one. So Dos Santos rubber match? I don't know. I get that, but the most recent one is Stipe beating the holy hell out of him and beat him on one leg. Really was a very dominant performance.
Karate kid.
But I do feel for Stipe a little bit because that we have seen this scenario recently with Joanna and with Cody, where they were champs, they lost quickly, and they got right back in there and got to fight for the title.
Yep.
I mean, quite frankly, Ronda too. I know Ronda took a longer break, but she lost really badly to Holly and she got to fight for the title. It wasn't fighting Holly, but she got right in there with a title shot. So we'll see, man. We shall see. We'll see what becomes of it. Any final thoughts from yesterday?
I thought it was good fights overall. Looking forward to next week from some free fights.
You got Dos Santos or Ivanov?
I think I got Ivanov.
Yeah. All right.
I just think that the toll has accumulated on Dos Santos, and I just think that he's like Orlovsky. He's got that special little button on his chin now.
What about
if you hit that button just right? Night.
What about on one boxing match, Lucas Matisse or Manny Pacquiao?
I can never go against Pacquiao, but I'm thinking that Pacquiao's just not focused and dedicated.
I'm a little worried about all the stuff that's gone around him because there were talks that this fight might not come to fruition because of some financial stuff. Because Pacquiao's doing this, I guess, by himself. He's not really going through Top Rank. They only have a side deal with ESPN.
Do we have to watch this through the app again?
Yeah, I'll send you a password.
Yeah, I am not watching the app.
Well, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Bonus segment here for you guys. Wanted to get into a couple other news and notes that we weren't able to get into. Obviously, the majority of the conversation today was surrounding 226 and DC's awesome performance against Brock Lesnar. Really, really cool. Let's see. All right, rest of the card. Two things I want to mention. Mike Perry's win over Paul Felder. Thought he looked fantastic. Thought Platinum Mike looked really, really good. Good for him to start branching out and get some coaching. It does feel like a guy that dangerous needed a little bit more polish onto his game. And seems like he got that. He looked very, very impressive against Paul Felder, who was a complete badass, fought with a broken arm. And those guys put on a hell of a show. Really, really great. I was a little surprised that Dana, because Dana didn't give a fight of the night bonus. He gave out four different bonuses, and I was a little surprised that didn't get fight of the night. I thought those guys put on a really, really great show. Paulo Costa, who's very handsome, I'm just going to put that out there, he TKO'd Uriah Hall in the second round. Dana White says that he thinks he's going to be the next big thing in Brazil. I'd agree. I think that guy has just a really impressive package that you're putting together with everything. He's just got the look. He's got the skill set. And so I think he's right in that regard. A couple interesting things in the Conor stratosphere. He apparently, his coach, John Kavanaugh, came out this week and he said that Conor McGregor's talks are ongoing with Khabib. Dana yesterday balked at talking about it. Dana seems very, very, and he said he doesn't want to do it until the trial is cleared. You know, Dana's now gone on two episodes of Get Up on ESPN, which is like their flagship morning show. And, you know, they obviously are going to always ask him about Conor, where things stand. And he's had the out clause of, well, we're going to wait for the law to play out. I feel like that's what they're kind of doing. Because I do think this. Look, I felt like yesterday the UFC came. I thought all the Brock stuff, DC stuff is awesome. I'm looking forward to the fight. But it does feel a little bit like the UFC was caught with their pants down with this whole USADA thing, just because, you know, they kind of just thought that people will forget, and people didn't forget. And so I think with the Conor thing, we're going to be like, all right, well, are you going to punish him at all for the incident with the bus, or is this just a law thing and a lawsuit thing, which it may be. At that point, you know, Conor will have been out for how long? But he hasn't been under this fake suspension. So I think that's just what they're waiting for. See how bad this plays out. I don't think Conor's going to, I don't think anything serious is going to happen with him. I'd be very, very surprised if it did. But it is New York. That is the one X factor with this all. And New York doesn't mess around, even if you are a celebrity. And in fact, a lot of the times, you know, this makes me think of the Plaxico Burress thing where, you know, Bloomberg was so anti-gun. And the fact that Plaxico Burress had a gun go off, even if nobody got hurt, and it was a bullet going off in his own leg, you know, Plaxico Burress, you know, he still had to serve jail time for it. So I don't want to rule out completely that nothing's going to happen with Conor. Max Holloway, this was big news this week. Max Holloway, he lost his fight with Brian Ortega. He had health issues. There's been a couple different things. You know, they said that this was because of there were a couple different things. They said concussion-like symptoms, so maybe he was training hard a week out. Some people put it up to weight-cutting issues, but Chael Sonnen came out with something. He spoke to somebody in his camp and said that Max hadn't begun the weight cut yet, which it does make sense. I mean, if he was in the hospital on Monday and the fight fell out, what was it, Tuesday or Wednesday? I think it was Tuesday. Makes sense that he hadn't really begun the weight cut yet if he was on point for it. So, I don't know. It's a scary thing with Max. He's had a really tough year with injuries. And you know, this is the guy who tried to save the Khabib fight when Tony Ferguson got hurt. He's an absolute badass. I love Max Holloway. And, you know, I just hope that he gets healthy. You know, Dana said he's not going to fight anytime soon. I think that's just because they don't know exactly what happened. And they want to figure that stuff out. What else do we got here? Ronda Rousey. Oh, I wanted to mention this. Ronda Rousey got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I saw a bunch of articles. I think Jonathan Snowden wrote a piece that, you know, it's a complicated past. Ariel Helwani saying it's a complicated past because she's not as embracive of her mixed martial arts past. And look, I really don't. For me, a Hall of Fame is a high, high honor. But it's also to recall these moments in time. And, you know, Ronda Rousey is going to go down as one of the top five most important fighters in the promotion's history. Is she not? I mean, with the superstardom she brought, with the mainstream ability that she brought to the UFC, bringing an entire gender with her to the sport, I got a hard time having any argument against Ronda Rousey being a Hall of Famer, or waiting for her to be a Hall of Famer, or even this discussion that she's not that, you know, didn't embrace the sport that much. Ronda Rousey's huge crime is that she's a sore loser, the sorest of sore losers, and she didn't want to talk to the media. I get it. The media for the fight, it's you wish everybody, if you're a reporter, or if you're a talk show host, or if you're in the media, you wish everybody could be Daniel Cormier or Dominic Cruz after a loss, or Stipe, who's not even a great soundbite, but went there after after the fight, got knocked the bleep out, wiped the floor with him. Then they had a sideshow that went down to the octagon. He still went with a busted face and talked to every single media member that asked. You wish everybody was like that. But should that really determine somebody's Hall of Fame status or not? Whether or not they spoke to the media? Anderson Silva went half his career pretending he didn't speak English. And when he lost, I mean, could always play that card if he wanted to. When he got steroids, could always play that card if he didn't want to. You know, so just because Ronda Rousey didn't do interviews, that should determine whether or not you think she's worthy of a Hall of Fame. It's stupid to me. Her run in the octagon, the thrill of watching a Ronda Rousey fight was so amazing, and it shouldn't. The idea that anybody has to take pause in it is dumb to me, because she's a sore loser, didn't want to talk to reporters. And they're like, well, you know, I think I may have a different feeling of this because I'm in radio, and it's rare that radio can play the integrity card. But here's why I think I don't take it so personally. You know, I'm a guy who I book guests on the morning show, and I, you know, book guests for my talk show. And so I kind of know the hierarchy of media, and eventually you get passed by. You know, this is a show, our little show here, Fighters Fury, which is you know, one of my favorite shows to do out of all the ones that I do. I love doing this show. We've had the honor of having Conor McGregor on this show three times. The last one I think we had him on was before the Dustin Poirier fight, and that's because he blew the hell up. And you get left in the dust. You know, when Ronda Rousey doesn't have to do the rat race of doing the MMA podcasts and the hardcore fans, where she can just go to Kimmel or Ellen or Conan or Jimmy Fallon or do Saturday Night Live. What is really needed of those writers anymore? And it sucks, but it's a give and take. It's a give and take. Like, we can't act like when we get those guys when they're on their rise up, or when we get those guys when they are at the peak of their powers, or when we do write about them, that it's not going to get us more hits, more ratings, more clicks, whatever it may be. Did I say clicks twice? More retweets, whatever. And so it is a give and take. And it's not... Look, it's not the most ideal way I think most people would have gone about it, because Ronda, I feel like if she would have just swallowed her medicine and answered the questions, it would have been so much easier. It doesn't feel like there should have been this bitterness. You know, I understand not wanting to talk, like, you know, if she was legitimately injured after the Holly Holm fight because apparently her jaw was broken and... You know, couldn't even eat an apple, I believe, is what Ramona Shelburne wrote back in the day. You know, but then in the lead up to the Nunes fight, not wanting to talk to the media. Like, it would have been just so easy to talk. And the problem is that, well, then the media is going to take shots because you didn't talk to them. And then she's going to say, well, media didn't stand by me. It's like, well,
neither is supposed to stand by either. Nobody's obligated to stand by anybody, but also we probably should stand for each other a little bit more because we know that that relationship is beneficial both ways. Sometimes a star becomes so big that it's not needed to talk to the core media anymore. But the one thing about being a fighter is this is the fan base that's going to talk to you, that's going to always care about you the most. Not the WWE fans, not the movie fans. It's going to be the fight fans, the fans that are your base. And so I do think that you should always be mindful of that. But I don't, again, I don't think that it is anywhere close to a personal crime to not want to talk to the media and being upset about losing and not being good at handling losing. So that's my little Ronda Rousey rant, but I had to get that in there for this episode because I do think it's an important thing. We got to do a little bit with SEMA. I wanted to get into a little bit more of Lucas Matisse versus Manny Pacquiao before we get out of here because Manny Pacquiao is one of my favorite fighters of all time. I love Manny Pacquiao. And he's fighting Lucas Matisse. Dangerous, dangerous fight for him. Matisse is no walk in the park. I do feel like Manny's a lot more skilled than him, even at this age. And Manny has had very good success with brawlers like Matisse, who come forward, who try and get you against the ropes, very predictable. He throws a lot of volume, but I just feel like he is, even though he is dangerous, I feel like he's tailor-made for Manny. And even at this age, I feel like Pacquiao will do work against him. And, you know, Manny's had a bunch of bad breaks in the later part of his career. It bums me out that there was some financial stuff around this. The dude should have wealth upon wealth. And I wish he could get, you know, one more big fight, whether it be against Lomachenko or Terrence Crawford. The Lomachenko fight, still think he has the capability of winning that fight. Terrence Crawford, I think, would be a bad day at the office for him. But there are financial things. You know, I heard Bob Arum talk about this, that, you know, he's still dealing with IRS ramifications, and that's a problem. You know, I don't want to hear that with Manny Pacquiao. So hopefully something big leaps off this. I do think he's going to get the win over Lucas Matisse. I'll say by decision because, you know, Manny hasn't finished fights lately. And especially when, you know, a guy gets like Matisse, feels like Manny could get that feeling like he's outclassed him in seven rounds and then, you know, lets up on the gas. It's kind of been his MO. Did cost him against Jeff Horn, though. He got screwed in that fight. So he has to be careful. He definitely has to be careful. And finally, before we get out of here, very cool to see our guy, Shannon the Cannon Briggs, was back in the kitchen. And I like seeing him have his mojo back. You know, he's been hustling like crazy for his family and working his ass off, you know, trying to get some bread because, you know, look, man, nobody wants to fight a guy who's 46 and dangerous as hell. It's hard out there. It's hard out there for a guy like that. And I really hope that he gets the Tyson Fury fight. But it was cool seeing him back in Fresh Market, back making the old smoothies champ back in the kitchen. So hopefully we'll see the steps towards Shannon fighting again soon. Seems like he's going to fight this summer regardless before we're out, and hopefully that leads to a Tyson Fury fight. That's what I really like to see because I think the way Tyson Fury looks, I think Shannon can do damage against him. I really do. And I think that'd be pretty cool. Shout out again, by the way, to Harold Calderon for being, you know, so hospitable at the media days. Really, really great performance by that young man. I really think Harold is ready to take a leap. You know, that's a lot of pressure that he had going into that fight where the crowd's chanting your name. It's a matchup that looked like it got a little personal. I'm sure there's personal background with those guys knowing each other from, you know, being in the same city. I know JD said that, oh, my brother beat your ass back in the day. And Harold was so calm and collected. I mean, he looked the way I would say is I felt like Harold Calderon in that fight looks like a professional, and obviously they're all professional fighters, but I felt like he went in there to handle business, and that's what he did. He had a game plan to execute. He executed it. He didn't make it a personal fight. He went in there to showcase himself, to entertain the masses that were there to see him. I mean, that building was, again, I would say 50 to 55% his fans, which is very impressive for a local show. And they were crazy for him. So that's what kind of led to us wanting to cover him in this latest surge in his career, because we took notice of that the last time he fought the Hard Rock. And he was rightfully headlining and was very, very impressive. So very, 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 very good job. Well done. Very, what am I saying? I'm stuttering here. So job well done, Harold. Miami's new king, man. Forget about LeBron James. You got the King Calderon. Very, very good performance for him. And all the guys. They put in such a great, great performance yesterday. Really, really impressive out there, and an entertaining card. So thank you to everybody. That was the one thing I didn't like. You know, there was, you know, some fans saying FJD, JD's a P. I don't like that, man. You know, I understand we want to be hospitable and we want to make a hostile fight environment for your guy, and it's fighting, but you know, these guys are out there. You know, JD Martinez, Harold Calderon, they're not making the, not even that the money should make it right, but I do think, you know, that comes with the territory. When it's you're a gazillionaire, you're going to get some nasty stuff shouted at to you. But, you know, these guys are out there. They're at the beginnings of their careers and hoping to get to the top of the mountain. And they're in there and they're getting some nasty stuff heaved their way. It's like, man, come on. These are two young fellas in there, putting it all out on the line, beating their brains in for your entertainment. Nobody should be calling anybody a P word. It's just, it's like one of those things that should just be off limits at a fight, because they had the balls to walk into that ring. Anyway, everybody have a tremendous week. We'll be back next week. We'll recap the Pacquiao fight, UFC. I don't even know where Dos Santos Ivana fight. I don't even know where it is, quite frankly. But we'll be watching it. We'll be watching it, and we'll have all the reaction to the news and notes that happen in mixed martial arts and boxing. Love you guys, and talk to you then.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.